When most people think of departments of natural resources, they tend to think of hunting, fishing, conservation, and perhaps the regulation of off-road vehicles and snowmobiles. Yet a good share of Michigan DNR responsibilities bear on state parks and historical research records and acquisitions. These can be seen to represent the cultural side of the DNR, interwoven into the general mission. We'll talk about DNR-managed cultural resources, their range and significance for the Upper Peninsula, next on Media Meet. Hello and welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm Bill Hart. Our guests are DNR Parks and Recreation Division Western UP District Supervisor Doug Rich, DNR UP Trails Coordinator Ron Yesney, and Michigan History Center Fort Wilkins historian Barry James. Thank you for being here. The history of state parks is a fascinating topic in its own right. A notable event in that regard is creation of the Michigan State Park Commission a century ago, May 12, 1919. What did it allow the state to do, that is, to foster a state park system?
You betcha. It's a really kind of neat opportunity. We're living in the 100th year centennial of Michigan State Parks. And
celebrating it all year, by the way,
you got
the system.
It. May 12th was the birth date, and essentially back in 1919, the legislature wanted to set aside certain lands back in those days, kind of building off of John Muir and the National Park Movement, for future generations to protect that natural and cultural resource for folks like us today.
But it allowed, the commission could do things that I understand they might not have been able to do before, the state might not be able to do before, certain kinds of acquisitions and control and that sort of thing, right?
You betcha. Back in 1895, the Mackinac Island came on board as the first state park. Actually, it was a national park,
the second one
mm-hmm. in the nation. And the state of Michigan didn't have the ability to bring these parks on. So they established the Mackinac State Park Commission just specifically for Mackinac Island, Fort Michilimackinac and whatnot. But they needed to expand upon that, and that's what came about with the Michigan State Park Commission in 1919, thus celebrating the 100th year anniversary. Okay. So that allowed us to acquire, whether we bought it or gifted or donated to the state of Michigan for future generations.
Okay. Two Michigan state parks predate the creation of the state park system. One you just mentioned, Mackinac Island State Park, which had been our second national park, and Interlochen State Park, purchased in 1917. How did Interlochen come about, and what was the general approach to acquisition overall at that time?
Basically, with the Michigan State Park Commission, that established the authority to actually go forth and acquire these lands. And Interlochen, as you stated, came on board in 1917, to the tune of $60,000, and it protected the last virgin pines within northern lower Michigan, and it expanded out from there. Okay. Essentially, the oldest state park in the UP is Baraga State Park, established in 1922.
I see.
And now, today, we're up to 103 state parks statewide.
Yeah, 103 state parks and recreation areas, over 140 campgrounds, a million camp nights a year.
You betcha.
Overall, the parks attract some 28 million visitors, helping to drive Michigan's $26 billion outdoor recreation economy or industry. So where do most of the visitors come from, and how are attendance and visitor numbers holding up these days?
Actually, we've been increasing a little bit over the last few years, and essentially I think a lot of that's the economy is driving this. Mm-hmm. And with that 1 million visitors, every year we go up a little bit more. And we're probably one of the leading state park systems in the nation as far as camp nights, and folks coming out to visit. For example, Porcupine Mountains is 300,000 visitors per year. And it doesn't seem to be slowing down.
Yeah, I would agree with Doug on that. Yeah. We did a survey within the parks within the Michigan History Center, and Fayette was up 19% last year and cracked 90,000 visitors for the first time in a while. Wow. And Fort Wilkins was around 150,000, and we were up 3%. So we are seeing a little bit of an uptick with visitation at our sites.
That's great. The park system also includes, and this is just the park system now, 900 miles of trails, mainly non-motorized, I think 80% or 85%. With a statewide trail system being expanded. Ron, you want to talk about the statewide system of trails?
Sure. Actually, in the state of Michigan, we are the leader in acquisition, maintenance, and development of rail trails. So if you look at our trail system right now, we've got, statewide, we've got over 13,000 miles of trail. In the Upper Peninsula, we're right around 4,000 miles of trail. And some of that's motorized and some of that's non-motorized. When you start talking about cultural history and historical history, we're doing a lot with our trail system, and we're using our trail systems to tell stories. That's really evident with the Iron Ore Heritage Trail here in Marquette County, where we've used a series of rail trails that connected the kilns and the mines and the shipping all together to tell a story. And that's become a very popular destination for people. We're also doing similar things in Gogebic County, and we're doing similar things in Houghton County. Next thing I think we could talk about is the Iron Bell Trail.
I was going to ask about that. What's the progress in Iron Bell? That goes from Detroit north to the UP and all the way to Ironwood.
Yeah, the vision for the Iron Bell Trail was to have a hiking trail and a biking trail that connected Detroit to Ironwood, and there was a lot of success with that.
They're really two trails.
They're two separate trails.
Okay.
And the non-motorized hiking trail is very much complete. There are a few gaps we're working on, but that's complete. We're investing quite a bit of money in that, and we're seeing lots and lots of use on that trail system. On the bike path, a lot of the connections have been made between Belle Isle and Mackinac City. And then we've done some great things in the Upper Peninsula with that too. Most of the work has been done in Gogebic County, Iron County, and some in Dickinson County. Again, we're using our trails to tell a story. The other major significant thing we have going on in the Upper Peninsula is we have the very first rail trail acquisition ever in the state of Michigan occurred in Schoolcraft County, Elgin, Schoolcraft County. It's called the Haywire Trail. Okay. The people in that community, along with the snowmobile club, had the foresight when that railroad was going out of business to buy that 38 to 40 mile segment of rail trail, and that was the first purchase of a railroad grade in the state of Michigan for trail purposes. And that predated the Rails to Trails Act. The National Rails to Trails Act actually occurred in 1976. The acquisition of the Haywire grade occurred in 1970. So next year is the 50th anniversary, and we're going to have a large celebration around that acquisition, that development, and use that to tell a story.
Okay. Park responsibilities also overlap with 746 boat launching sites, 16 harbors of refuge, roughly 30 miles apart, 11 state underwater preserves covering 2,400 square miles of Great Lakes bottomlands. Can you give us an idea of how many DNR personnel are committed to state park operations overall? How many are contractors and how many are volunteers?
With state parks, actually, we're with Parks and Recreation Division.
That's
we're
what
actually
I mean, yeah.
The biggest division in the DNR as far as personnel goes, representing over 200 full-time employees as well as our seasonal and thousands of short-term workers, as we call them, our summer help. And essentially, they are the backbone. Those are the folks cleaning the bathrooms, mowing the grass,
sure.
That sort of thing, in keeping, you know, the books up with order. And contractors, there are many, and depending on the year, like right now, We have various contractors rebuilding, like F.J. McLean State Park in Hancock, contractors working at Barriga Electrical, as well as many volunteers. We have active Friends groups throughout the park system, Friends of the Porkies, Friends of Van Riper, Fort Wilkins Natural History Association, and they're doing great things. For like Marquette County here, the playground at Van Riper was donated and built by the Friends of Van Riper Craig Lake. So we look at many different ways to help us run the system.
Okay. How are parks funded, and what have been the challenges historically in operating and maintaining them?
You betcha. Parks right now are pretty much self-funded, other than small allotments of general funding dollars for Belle Isle. So it is, we like to call in the DNR, it's bucket funding. So for parks, we have two primary funding sources. One's park improvement, which comes from camping sales, your folks coming out for picnicking, day use, concession contracts, that sort of thing. And then secondly, the park endowment. So that comes from leases on oil and gas leases from downstate.
And minerals too.
Right? You got it. And waterways is a separate funding source for boating access sites and harbors.
Okay.
So from fuel sales and harbor nights and that sort of thing. But we, Parks and Recreation Division, other than a small allotment for Belle Isle, is all self-funded. We've had no general funding dollars since 1994.
How about the impact of the recreation passport? How popular is it, and how does that contribute?
It's huge. Essentially, back in 94...
You should mention, this is something you can purchase, and it appears on your license plate?
You betcha.
Okay.
You go to the Secretary of State, and you can opt into Recreation Passport, and you get a little P on your license plate tag. And what that allows you into is all state parks, boating access sites for $11. It's fairly economical.
That includes the historical parks?
We receive a percentage of the passports, and we've been very fortunate to receive funding for both Fayette and Fort Wilkins for specific cultural resource projects, whether it be building maintenance or exhibits or archaeological projects. So it's helped tremendously over the past several years.
Okay.
One of the neat things with the recreation passport as well allows for local grant opportunities. So if you have a community, village, city, county, park, you can apply for recreation passport grants. So not only does it fund the state park system, but it helps our key partnerships along as well.
Okay. A glance at Michigan State Park history reveals two important features. One is the fact that most are established in proximity to lakes and rivers, which are attractions in their own right. Another feature is that a lot of Michigan history and heritage is embedded in the parks, as Ron mentioned about the trails. It's most obvious, of course, at sites like Fayette Historic State Park and Garden, once a booming smelting operation, and Fort Wilkins Historic State Park, restored 19th century U.S. Army post in the Copper Country. Both are on the National Register of Historic Places. How did these preserved and interpretive sites come about? And are they all fairly modern additions? And who really controls them? Who pulls the strings on this?
What's interesting within these historic sites is they are both within state parks. So they're jointly managed by Parks and Recreation Division Michigan History Center. So the center, basically, we're responsible for the interpretation of the site with exhibits and written materials, working closely with our colleagues as well, but also archaeological remains and cultural remains both above and below grounds. And Parks and Recreation is the park. Buildings, exterior maintenance, campgrounds, visitor services, things like that. So we work pretty well together within these sites. It's a challenge. It always is with the sites and their scale. You're looking at over 40 historic structures, two lighthouses. So it's a tremendous task for us. But overall, to maintain these sites and really It's our job as stewards to maintain them and make sure we have a good product for the public. And I think if folks do visit these sites, they come across that, yeah, there are special places, and we're doing a pretty good job there.
Okay. I'm going to take a moment here to remind our viewers, and especially our radio listeners, that we're talking about cultural side of the DNR with DNR Parks and Recreation Division Western UP District Supervisor Doug Rich, DNR UP Trails Coordinator Ron Yesney, and Michigan History Center Fort Wilkins State Park historian Barry James. What about, I'm thinking in terms of some of these sites are old enough to, that they might, even things like Fort Wilkins, might require some archaeological work? Is that true?
Through Passport funding, we've been able to have several projects the last few years. We were able to actually survey.
Any conflicts between what developed historically in one era and, say, Native American history in another?
That sometimes will lead us in different directions depending on what's found. But if we're working with our colleagues in Park Recreation Division in a construction project, if we have to monitor these sites very carefully because, again, there's remains both above and below ground. And there are prehistoric remains that we need to be very cognizant of. And we work with the State Archaeology Office and the State Historic Preservation Office as well at both of those sites to make sure that we're not disturbing prehistoric or historic remains. Okay. Going back to your question about when the sites first started, Fort Wilkins was administered and only occupied for 5 years total. And the last time that there were actually soldiers that were there were in 1870, but then it became a very popular tourist destination. Really? And Keweenaw County and Houghton Counties came together and really thought that it should become a state park. So they purchased it for $2,000 in 1921. And then that was passed on to the state park system in 1923 when it became a state park. Fayette was privately owned by a lumber company for several years, and there was recognition again in the 50s that it should become a state park. So it was up until about 1959 that Fayette was added to the state park system. And it's a jewel. It's one of the premier industrial sites in the Midwest.
Amazing. There's also the Father Marquette National Memorial Site located within Straits State Park in Mackinac County. We're told it's getting an upgrade to enhance the visitor experience. What's planned? Who's participating, and when's it going to be ready?
There's a consortium of different agencies involved, including Parks and Recreation Division, the Michigan History Center, the community of St. Ignace, and others. And they've actually developed a master plan that's available for review. Actually, on June 18th, there'll be a meeting at the library in St. Ignace. And for those interested, they can come and see what we're looking to have planned and also make comments. And also, they will be looking for comments online from folks that can't make that meeting to make suggestions or for improvements or whatever their thoughts are about the site.
Okay. We had talked about, you know, the 900 miles or so of trails within parks and the fact that there's a much bigger trail system. But are there trails to connect all the parks?
Yeah, I was planning to talk about that. It's one of our, we have a state trails plan that we developed in 2012, and we're in the process of updating it now. And one of the real strategic initiatives there is to interconnect our state parks with the trail system. And we've been working really hard with that in the Upper Peninsula. And one of the neat features that we have now is we have a, we have grants and we have projects where we can acquire easements for trail development. So
what we're, you also have trail hikers that do a lot of work too.
So we're using Iron Bell funding. Mm-hmm. We're also using Passport funding to expand the Iron Bell Trail, which is also the North Country Trail. We're making it much more user friendly. So instead of wading through rivers and swamps, we're putting in nice boardwalks and bridges, and we're really making the Iron Bell Trail more of a destination trail for people that want to hike the entire Upper Peninsula, rather than in the past, before the state got involved, it was more in segments.
Yeah, you just do a segment.
People would hike a segment or a segment or a segment. Now we're completing, and we're really focused on those gaps.
You know, something that you brought up indirectly there is that, is it common that state and federal holdings, you mentioned the two trails, state and federal holdings of this kind fall within a shared space or shared Venn diagram, so to speak? What do you say, Barry?
The Father Marquette National Memorial is really a different sort of park within our system because it was established by
park
the federal government
park.
And then became part of the state park system. So it's sort of interesting now that we're, as it moves forward, there's another time where there's different agencies involved again to keep it moving forward to build that facility. Because it burned down back in 2000, 2001, and there's been a mission and an effort from the population up here, as well as the, you know, not only the center, but the Parks and Recreation Division, the community of St. Angus, to get that rebuilt. So it's moving forward, and all those pieces are there. As far as a federal...
A lot of campsites in that area.
Yeah, and that end, too, for Strait State Park. So, again, if folks are interested in learning more about the plan, that June 18th meeting would be one to sit in on.
Okay. Less obvious is the fact that many of the parks themselves reflect our history. That is just the park. Michigan helps spark interest in state parks by its connection to the auto industry and highway systems. So the parks grew up with a family car, right?
That's correct. So you take back in the day, Henry Ford and his Model T made it much more accessible. So we had a big boon in the 20s where folks were getting out and able to go to these places. Yet there's places like what we refer to as the Ring of Detroit. So your Pontiac Lakes, your Highlands, your Proud Lake recreation areas. These folks could get out of the city, go to these places and find that peace and harmony and just get away from the city. Or you know, I-75, as you go along, you have a number of state parks right on that spine, so. Yeah.
It's interesting that in the, it picks up even more in the 1930s when cars and roads are a lot more comfortable.
You betcha.
And there's another boom in the 1940s and 50s. What would seem to account for that one?
The 40s and 50s, we had a tough time after the Depression, World War II. We like to refer to it as a roller coaster of funding. And it was specifically to one specific person, Genevieve Gillette, who was kind of the championship of state parks. And she actually went on the legislative floor and did presentations to the legislators at that time, which invigorated the funding and a more robust model for state parks.
Was this a Gillette of Gillette razors?
No. Genevieve Gillette was a really good friend of P.J. Hoffmaster, who was the first state park superintendent, and they both graduated from Michigan State as landscape architects, and state parks was their passion.
Because I know there were some other business people involved that left property, like Miller Brewing Company.
You betcha.
That kind of thing. We can't talk about this history part without talking about the legacy of the Civilian Conservation Corps and the Work Progress Administration. Their influence is felt in parks across the country. The Depression-era jobs program focused mainly on conservation projects, some firefighting and stuff like that. What are some of the working memorials to those times preserved in the UP? Anyway.
At Fort Wilkins, the work that they had contributed is still evident today. And to me, it was interesting, not only infrastructure projects that they were working on, but the historic buildings as well. So we're looking at, they reconstructed two of the Marion Liston men's cabins, the shower facility, the park store, the entire stockade.
These things are still working.
And they are. And, mm-hmm. and it's amazing to me how long they have lasted. With the maintenance that we have to do at these sites. Also, the Keweenaw Mountain Lodge and the roads and the trails up there are another good example in the Copper Country of WPA and CCC era projects.
Just to kind of tie bar off of what Barry's saying is they're scattered throughout the UP. So you take Baraga State Park with their 1930s WPA toilet building. It's an architectural gem, as well as J.W. Wells in Cedar River basically was built by the CCC. And a lot of those structures.
It's easy to pass that up, you know. It's easy to drive by it, and you know, if you're not aware of that. But that's wonderful stuff there.
Absolutely.
The Have there been any comparable programs for hard-hit workers in the state that have benefited, or the federal government, from the federal government, that have benefited the Michigan State Park System?
Over the years, there's been a number of programs. Obviously, the WPA and the CCC was big, mm-hmm. but we have this thing in Michigan called the Michigan Civil Conservation Corps that was brought on by the CCC boys as a job training program for young youth, and it carries on to this day.
I want to mention the Michigan History Center. We've talked about it, but I mean, we've mentioned it, but I want to talk about it a little bit, which includes the State Museum with some 130,000 artifacts, the Archives of Michigan, housing Michigan's recorded heritage dating to 1792, the Office of the State Archaeologist, whom you mentioned, and that manages objects on land and underwater. How did the DNR inherit the center with all that entails, and how is that kind of activity organized to flow with the mission?
We are one of the smaller divisions within the DNR, but based on the responsibilities for the state and the cultural and natural resources, we were moved from several different departments over the years, and it's sort of come full circle. The historic sites were within the Department of Conservation, and then put with the Michigan History Division in the 70s, and then as time has moved on, the division was put back with the Department of Natural Resources. And any sort of cultural resources within any state park, or even the artifacts that may be underwater, or there's a process to learn or get information about these things or projects through the state. Okay. So, for example, at Fort Wilkins, if we have a project where we'll be doing ground disturbance, we contact the State Historic Preservation Office and the Archaeologist's Office, and there's a step process so we're not disturbing these remains for future interpretation for the state of Michigan.
That's so interesting. Doug, how do you rate the future viability and resilience of the state park system? Just got a few seconds here.
Yeah, we got a strong future. As Michigan's tourism industry is kind of the third leg of the stool of the economy, mm-hmm. and you know, with our funding models, I mean, life could be better. But right now, we have strong, vibrant economy. We're bringing in a lot of use with that 1.2 million visitors, and we keep making those key upgrades as we find those user needs. So.
Okay, I'm afraid we have to call it there for time. We've been talking about the cultural side of the DNR and state parks with DNR Parks and Recreation Division Western UP District Supervisor Doug Rich, DNR UP Trails Coordinator Ron Yesney, and Michigan History Center Fort Wilkins historian Barry James. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.